A career criminal is an individual who engages in a pattern of criminal activities over an extended period of time, making a lifestyle out of their unlawful behavior. Unlike occasional offenders who might commit isolated crimes, career criminals consistently and persistently involve themselves in criminal activities as their primary source of income. Some career criminals literally carve out a niche for themselves and specialize in specific types of crime, while others participate in a variety of illegal activities. Their criminal endeavors range from theft, fraud, and drug trafficking to more violent offenses. Kenyan criminal history is filled with tales of career criminals whose overconfidence and arrogance led them to overlook details, neglect precautions, and do stupid things that ultimately led to their downfall. This is the story of Kevin Matundura. This is True Crime Kenya. Nakuru County, situated in the Great Rift Valley region of Kenya, has a population of approximately 2.1 million and is the third most populous county in Kenya after Nairobi County and Kiambu County. Nakuru County is home to three beautiful Kenyan lakes, Lake Nakuru, Lake Elementaita, and Lake Naivasha, which are some of the major tourist attractions in the region and form part of the Rift Valley Soda Lakes. Lake Nakuru is best known for the thousands, sometimes millions, of pink flamingos nesting along its shores at various times of the year, forming an unusual and breathtaking sight. In 2007, the Kenyan presidential election results were bitterly disputed, resulting in political and ethnic tensions in many parts of the country. The violence stretched into 2008 and had a significant and lasting impact on Nakuru County, which borders seven other counties and forms a sensitive and delicate intersection of Kenyan tribes. One of the major impacts of post-election violence was the emergence of informal settlements within Nakuru. As a result of the violent clashes, communities were displaced, homes were destroyed, and families were forced to seek refuge in makeshift settlements, which evolved into the communities they are today. Youth crime in Nakuru remains a major concern to local and national government bodies, signaling broader systemic issues. One of the highest systemic issues is the high levels of unemployment and limited educational opportunities, which exacerbate the vulnerability of the young population to criminal temptations. Residents of informal settlements within Nakuru, such as Kaptembwa and Ronda, tend to be particularly affected and therefore face higher rates of poverty and crime. In 2015, several gangs emerged, drawing police attention and causing terror in Nakuru town.
They are well known for causing sleepless nights to residents of Nakuru County and its environs. Most of them are aged between 16 and 30 and are described as young and dangerous.
The young boys who are leaving from four, they are the ones that are joining these groups.
They have no second thought about hacking or shooting a person they think stands in their way of getting what they want. These are the police taunting boys of Nakuru, the area's most dangerous criminal.
Kevin Matundura was born in Nakuru in 1999. He grew up as an only child with his mother, a single parent, who raised him with the help of his grandmother. Kevin's mother and grandmother did their best to instill good morals and values in him throughout his childhood, but ultimately Kevin fell into a life of petty crime and began to get into trouble at a very young age. Driven by peer influence, thrill-seeking, and economic necessity, Kevin began engaging in minor theft and vandalism. For a time, his crimes were likely undetected, and he began to perceive his activities as low risk or normal. This early normalization can desensitize young criminals to the consequences of breaking the law. Kevin gradually grew to become part of the Nakuru criminal subculture, where criminal behavior is not only accepted, but glorified. This environment reinforced and normalized increasingly serious criminal acts, and Kevin became more deeply entrenched in the criminal lifestyle. Driven by a sense of invincibility and the pursuit of greater financial rewards, he began to experiment with weapons and engaged in higher risk activities, including armed robbery. In 2017, 18-year-old Kevin Matundura was arrested, charged, and convicted of armed robbery. Kevin was sentenced to death. The death sentence in Kenya is limited to offenses of treason, murder, and robbery with violence. Following several serious incidents, police and the Nakuru courts started to crack down on Nakuru gang activity and youth crime, resulting in numerous arrests. The courts ultimately began to issue more death sentences aimed at deterring young offenders from joining the growing gangs. Due to various probation loopholes, and despite receiving the harshest criminal sentence imaginable, this would not be Kevin's final criminal act. On March 14, 2017, at around 9 p.m., a Nakuru trader and farmer, James Womagunda, was on his farm in Bahati Constituency, Nakuru County, with his family. Mr. Womagunda was on his property that night with his wife, his two sons, and his niece, who lived with the family providing domestic assistance. The family had just finished their dinner and were cleaning up and going about their various evening routines when out of the darkness walked 19-year-old Kevin Matundura, who was out of prison on probation. Kevin was accompanied by his friend Joram Joroge and two other accomplices. They stealthily approached Mr. Womagunda's property, which consisted of a posho mill or maize processing business and the main farmhouse where the family lived. Kevin, Joram, and the other accomplices were a menacing sight, walking towards the compound, armed with an AK-47 machine gun, two pistols, several rounds of ammunition, and rope. Kevin and Joram walked into the posho mill where Mr. Womagunda was assessing his employee's day report, while the other two gang members entered the farmhouse through the back door. Brandishing their weapons, Kevin and Joram ordered Mr. Womagunda and his employee to lie down. They ransacked their pockets, taking money and phones before Joram put on the employee's dust coat and walked them at gunpoint to the main farmhouse. In the main house, the other two gang members had forced the residents, including Mr. Wamugunda's wife and niece, to lie face down on the floor, after which their hands and feet were firmly bound with rope. They then took all the residents' mobile phones and began ransacking the house. As soon as he walked into the farmhouse, Kevin locked eyes with Mr. Wamugunda's niece, who we will name Binti, which is not her real name. Kevin was instantly smitten with her. The gang members began to threaten and assault the residents and ransack the house, demanding to know where the valuables were. One of Mr. Wamugunda's sons later recalled that the robbers demanded 40,000 shillings from his father. He recalled hearing them say, quote, "Old man, you can give us 40,000 shillings and we will leave you alive. If you don't have money, give us your M-Pesa and ATM PIN numbers." End quote. His father refused to comply with their demands, but the robbers insisted they would not leave without money and decided to take a home theater system, which they estimated to be worth 30,000 shillings. They also took a water dispenser and a motor from the Posha mill. The robbers allegedly argued over who should take the music system, finally agreeing that one of them would take the speakers and the other would take the rest. In the midst of the chaos, Kevin remained laser focused on Binti. He began to gently soothe the woman, assuring her of her safety and eventually untying her hands and feet. He sifted through the mobile phones they had just stolen, asked her to identify her phone, and gave it back to her. He then allowed her to sit on the couch beside him. One of Mr. Wamugunda's sons recalled the bizarre sight, watching his cousin and an armed robber engage in quiet conversation in the middle of their horrific ordeal. Quote, "We spent time together, and from where I lay between a table and a chair, I could hear Matundura conversing with Binti. He asked her name and began to try to get to know her," end quote. The home invasion lasted 8 hours. As the time ticked by, the robbers began to relax, stretching out on the family couches and propping their heads up with pillows. They got hungry and debated on what to eat, deciding to make some tea and cook a little meat, which they ate hungrily. They found a bottle of wine and shared this amongst themselves. Kevin offered Binti a glass of wine, which she declined, as they continued to chat in low tones. Just before daybreak, the robbers located Mr. Wamugunda's car keys and began loading his car with their stolen goods. Their total loot included a motorized sewing machine, 10 bags of dry maize, a Samsung mobile phone, assorted clothes and shoes, a motorized rolling machine, and the driveway car. While Kevin and his accomplices loaded the car, Joram saw an opportunity and led Binti to the staff quarters at the back of the house, where he raped her. They then returned to the house, where Kevin and his other accomplices had finished loading the vehicle and were ready to leave. Just before they walked out, Kevin Matundura turned around and asked Binti for one more thing. You'll never guess what it was. Her phone number. That's right. Kevin Matundara asked Binti for her phone number. After robbing her uncle's house. After his idiot friend had raped her. After he and his friends had held her family hostage at gunpoint for 8 long hours. Exhausted, traumatized, and eager for an end to the ordeal, Binti glanced at the AK-47 he was holding and obliged. She gave him her number. The sun came up on 15th March 2017, and the exhausted family, still horrified by their ordeal, called the police, who arrived and began their investigation. Inquiries were underway when they suddenly received a huge break in the case. Unbelievably, Kevin Matundara had sent Binti a text message apologizing for the gang's deeds the previous night. He had found out that Joram had raped her, and he apologized profusely for this, saying that he was willing to tell her where the family could find their vehicle. Binti, understandably shocked, showed the text to her cousin, who notified the police. Her cousin later said in court, quote, "Binti showed me a text message sent to her by Kevin that morning, informing her where we could find my father's car, as well as the car keys. In the message, he went on to apologize for what had happened the previous night. The man also asked her if she could find time to meet him," end quote. Under police guidance, Binti agreed to meet the accused. She told Kevin that she did not have enough fare for the 9-kilometer trip from Kenya Industrial Training Institute to Nakuru town, and in a shocking display of recklessness, arrogance, or plain stupidity, Kevin sent Binti 200 shillings for the fare. Most incredibly, Kevin used M-Pesa, a Kenyan money transfer app, to send her the money, essentially providing Binti with his full name and phone number, basically doing the police's job for them. In the company of detectives, Binti went to the agreed meeting point at the Choices Hotel in Changanyiko Trading Center, where she found Kevin patiently waiting for his date. Police immediately swarmed the area, placing Kevin Matundara under arrest. He confessed to having participated in the robbery incident and led the police to a farm where he and his accomplices had buried the guns and rounds of ammunition. This farm was the home of Joram Joroge's aunt, Josephine Waihini. Joram had also brought some of the stolen goods into her house. On the afternoon of March 15, 2017, Josephine Waihini was attending a church service in Bahati when she received an unusual call. The caller introduced himself as a detective based in Nakuru who was investigating a robbery incident that had occurred in the neighborhood the previous night. The detective told Josephine that some firearms had been recovered, buried on her 1-acre farm compound, and stolen goods had also been recovered in her house. In a panic, Josephine rushed back to her home, which was a few meters away. She could not comprehend what was going on, and upon arriving at her house, she was shocked to find her nephew Joram and another young man she did not know sitting in her home, restrained with handcuffs. several police officers were on the scene. Some were guarding the two young men, while the others searched the house. Displayed on the coffee table were two firearms, namely a Blow 99 pistol and a Hestol machine gun, as well as 42 belted ammunition in a magazine. The police told her they had also recovered a motorized sewing machine hidden within her house. Before she could wrap her mind around the situation, Josephine Wahini was also arrested and bundled to a waiting police Land Cruiser, after which they were all ferried to Bahati Police Station. It was during her time in the police cells that Josephine learnt that her nephew was suspected to be part of an armed gang of robbers who had raided the home of businessman James Womagunda and hidden the stolen goods along with some evidence in her home. The following morning, they appeared before an Akuru Chiefs Magistrate's Court, where she, her nephew Joram, and his friend Kevin Matundura were jointly charged with offenses that shocked, embarrassed, and terrified her. There is no indication that any of the other accomplices were ever found. The three were charged with 6 counts relating to robbery with violence, handling of stolen goods, rape, and possession of firearms and ammunition. All 3 accused parties denied the charges and were released on bond, but could not raise the large sum of money required in exchange for their freedom. As they were unable to raise the bail money, they remained in prison on remand throughout the trial. Sadly for Josephine Wahini, her nephew's selfish actions and her inability to pay the bond meant that she was held in custody for the duration of the entire trial, which lasted 5 years. The lengthy trial was punctuated by long adjournments and was finally concluded on 23rd December 2022. Ms. Wahini's granddaughter, who lived with her, testified as a prosecution witness and said that she had seen her uncle Joram arrive home at 5 a.m. on March 15th carrying a large brown bag which he placed under the table. It also emerged that after investigations, the police had resolved to treat Ms. Wahini as a prosecution witness, but failed to withdraw charges against her, which ultimately resulted in her being prosecuted along with Kevin and Joram, and ultimately cost her 5 years of her freedom. Binti bravely attended court to give her testimony. She described the 8-hour home invasion and said that at the very end of the ordeal, one of the suspects directed her to the staff quarters of the house. Quote, "I did not know what was coming. I pleaded with him that I was on my period, but he would hear none of it and held a gun on me and ordered me to take my clothes off." End quote. Binti, who testified before Nakuru Senior Resident Magistrate Yvonne Katambi, identified Joram Njoroge as the man who raped her. She told the court that she could identify the two, Kevin Matundura and Joram Njoroge, with certainty, as all the lights in the house were on throughout the ordeal, and she and her family had been in close vicinity and interacted with the robbers for the entire time. Additionally, she recalled that Njoroge had not covered his face to hide his identity. The woman also managed to identify him as he had a gap between his front teeth and a cracked tooth on his upper jaw. She recalled that her uncle, aunt, and 2 cousins had their hands tied for the duration of the siege, but confirmed that Kevin had untied her. Binti told the court that Kevin began to call and text her the following day. He apologized for the gang's actions and said he couldn't stop thinking about her. He told her he wanted to have a relationship with her and started sending more and more text messages throughout the day, gradually opening up to her about the location of some of the stolen property. She said she was determined to see the robbers pay for their actions and kept engaging with Kevin in conversation until they agreed to meet on a date where he was ultimately arrested. On Valentine's Day 2023, Nakuru Principal Magistrate Yvonne Katambi sentenced Kevin Matundura and Joram Njoroge to death. Justice Katambi noted that both men had lengthy criminal records and that Kevin Matundura was on parole, having been convicted and sentenced to death for a similar home invasion in 2017. Quote, "I have considered the fact that the accused persons were armed with a machine gun, two pistols, and several rounds of ammunition. I have further taken into consideration the injuries sustained by the victims and hereby sentence the accused persons accordingly," end quote, ruled Ms. Katambi. The court further sentenced Kevin to 7 years imprisonment for being in possession of firearms and an additional 7 years for possession of ammunition without a license. In addition to his death sentence, Justice Katambi sentenced Joram Njoroge to a further 20 years in prison for rape. In relation to Joram's aunt Josephine, Justice Katambi stated, quote, "It is evident that the second accused person, Ms. Waihini, was not aware that the firearms and ammunition had been buried on her farm. On that premise, I find that the evidence on record is not sufficient to convict the accused person of the charge of robbery with violence," end quote. Josephine was fully acquitted of all charges and released. After receiving his sentence, Kevin Matundura pleaded with the court for a non-custodial sentence. In his mitigation before Principal Magistrate Yvonne Katambi, Kevin, now aged 24, pleaded with the court for a lenient punishment, saying that he was too young to be condemned to a life behind bars and now felt motivated to be a productive member of society. Kevin claimed to have reformed and changed his life after spending 5 years in remand prison. Quote, "I am at a young age and do not want to spend the rest of my life in custody. I have undergone counseling and would like to be allowed to go back home and give back to the community," quote, said Kevin. In 2018, the Kenyan Law Commission recommended that the death penalty should be abolished, but governments have repeatedly argued that abolition is not supported by the will of the Kenyan people. In 2021, the Death Penalty Project and the Kenya National Commission on Human Rights commissioned the Death Penalty Research Unit to carry out research on attitudes towards the death penalty. As part of this research, respondents were asked to select the top three measures most likely to reduce violent crimes in Kenya. The vast majority of respondents thought the most important solutions were better moral education of young people, reducing poverty, with more effective policing being the third choice. Only a handful chose more executions or more death sentences, preferring social justice and educative measures. There is no sure way to measure what effect Kevin's 5 years in custody have truly had on him, and whether he has indeed changed his ways without giving him another chance to prove himself. His career criminality was indeed very serious, but Kevin is right. He is way too young to lose his entire life as a result of the clearly stupid decisions he made at 19 years of age. There has to be a better way. Kevin's death sentence is pending, and it may be too late for him, but investing in the education and empowerment of Nakuru's youth can break the cycle of criminality, fostering a safer and more prosperous community for generations to come. True Crime Kenya is produced by Picture Media. Research, writing, and editing by DM Noor. Narrated by DM Noor. Theme song by Just a Band. Thank you for listening. Stay safe.